Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Dr. Donald Levy, director of the Siena College Research Institute. Welcome, Dr. Levy.
Great to be with you, Alan.
Well, the Siena College Bowl is regarded now as one of the top in the nation. Why? Because it not only has all the legitimacy we always knew it deserved, but it's attached to the New York Times. And when you're attached to the New York Times, that's it. How did that come about?
Well, it was years really in the making. When I first came to Siena, we started doing, as you may remember, state Senate races and congressional races here in the state of New York. And we pioneered a method that we were sampling off of lists of registered voters. And then we were coming up with a new method of determining likely voters based on a probability score rather than just cutting them or not. So when I went to the New York Times and I said, this is what I plan on doing, initially the folks that were there said, well, we don't want to publish it if it's coming off of a voter list. And so it took me a little while to demonstrate to them that there was actually greater predictive efficiency, less error with the method that we were using. And we sort of became colleagues and friends, and it led to the first race that we did with the Times was back in the de Blasio primary. And so from that point on, we've progressively worked more and more closely with them. We did work with them in 2016, 2017 in Virginia. 2018 really was the first, almost monumental project we did with them, where we did almost 100 polls in congressional races across the entire country. And we were posting that data, you may remember, live on both our and their website, which had never been done before. And now we've been doing this significant effort in the battleground states here in 2020. So we've worked quite closely with the Times now, going back almost 8 years.
So how you doing? What's your accuracy rate? I mean, can we take what you say to the bank?
Well, I think that certainly in 2018, our accuracy rate was well over 90%. So we learned a few things from 2016. 2016, we were the only public poll that had Trump up in Florida, and we were correct. We had a good poll in North Carolina, and we had in Pennsylvania, like some other pollsters, we had a bit of a clunker. Our poll in 2016 in Pennsylvania had Clinton up by 7 over Trump. As you know, the race was decided by less than 1 point. And when we had a chance to analyze that, we found a few things in our quotas that were off, most especially in Western PA. So we're much more rigorous today than we were in 2016 in terms of regional quotas by education, which was where some of the error was in state polls in 2016.
So what do you mean? What do you mean? Stop there, Don. Okay. What do you mean by that? Give us an example of how that could either work for you or against you.
Well, beginning in 2016, we saw that whether people did or did not have a bachelor's degree was highly predictive of their vote choice. So when you poll an area, you need to make sure that you have an appropriate number of folks with and without a college degree. It doesn't mean that 100% of people with BAs vote one way, 100% without vote the other way, but they are, extremely disparate in their overall views. For example, when you look today at a national poll, most especially amongst white voters with and without a BA, they are almost mirror images of one another in their vote choice.
What does that mean? I'm sorry, I'm a little slow.
All right, let me give you the numbers. Maybe I'm speaking too much in polling jargon here. But in our most recent national poll, which we completed on the 18th, if you look at white voters with a BA, they're for Biden 56-37, so a 19-point advantage. If you look at white voters nationally without a BA, they prefer President Trump 59-36. So a 23-point advantage the other direction. So they are decidedly different overall. And so going back to methodology, you have to make sure in an area like Western Pennsylvania that you have an appropriate number of white voters with and without. Otherwise, it can throw off your whole sample.
So what are you seeing?
Well, you know, in the most recent poll that we did, that was a national poll, I'll start there, we have Biden up by 9 points, 50-41, over President Trump. And that's pretty consistent with the polls that we're seeing from many of our colleagues who do high-quality polling, you know, that Biden is 8-11 points up. There was one poll that had Biden up by as much as 16. I wouldn't take that one to the bank. But as you know, we don't elect a president based on a national vote, although it still tells you something. The highest that Clinton ever was over Trump in 2016 was 7 points. Biden is now pretty reliably at 9 in our poll, 10 in others. So there's a little bit bigger lead for Biden over Trump than Clinton had in the national polling. Clinton's lead evaporated somewhat due to the Comey event, somewhat due just to the campaign itself. She ended up having a national advantage of about 2 points. It appears likely that Biden's margin nationally is going to be greater than that when we get to the election. So will that translate into an Electoral College victory? That's what we're, you know, taking a look at now. And we've polled in 19 individual states across the country. The six that are generally considered the primary battleground, that's Arizona, Florida, North Carolina, and then in the upper Midwest, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And most folks feel that that's where the race will be decided. There's several other states that are close, but those six are really key. And at this point, we have Mr. Biden up. Let's just look at the upper Midwest. We have Biden +7 in Pennsylvania. We have Biden +8 in Michigan. And our most recent poll in Wisconsin had Biden up by 10. So if that were to come to pass, those three states and Biden holding what Clinton had in 2016, then Biden would be over the 270 mark.
Can you poll for commitment? You know, I have this thesis. That's all it is a thesis, that there are a lot of people who didn't like Hillary Clinton. And there are fewer people who are in the camp of I don't like Biden. Can you poll for that kind of depth? In other words, how many people just don't like a person?
Sure. I mean, we look at that in every poll. You bring up the Clinton-Trump phenomenon. You know, we ask, do you have a favorable or unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump, of Hillary Clinton? And when we did that, you can very quickly analytically look at, well, who has a favorable opinion of them both? That was virtually no one in 16. And then you had about 40% each who had a favorable opinion of one and an unfavorable opinion of the other. That made sense. But you had about 20% of people who had an unfavorable opinion of both Clinton and Trump. When it was all said and done, more of those people ended up voting for Trump than for Clinton. In this race, that 20% who was unfavorable to both has fallen to about 5% of Americans who have an unfavorable opinion of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden. So that I hate them both phenomenon is not true this year.
Can you tell from that 5% which way they're likely to go? In other words, there are people who lie to their mothers, they lie to their pollsters, they lie because they're afraid of what the recompense would be if they get caught. Can you judge that at all?
Well, we certainly asked them because, you know, we asked them, who do you intend to vote for if the election is today? We asked them where they stand on any number of issues to try to get more insight. You know, to what degree are they going to be influenced by issues? I mean, some people have said this is the campaign with no issues, right? So we try to probe deeply into that group of people that we call the persuadables. When you get down to as few as 5% of the electorate, that's a very small group of people. A few of those people may end up not voting, which sometimes happens to folks who do not like both candidates. They may very well go to a third-party candidate. We think that Joe Jorgensen, for example, could very well end up at about 2 points nationally. Howie Hawkins, maybe 1 point. That's also something that's different than 216. When the third and fourth party candidates drew a much larger percent of the electorate, to some extent, because those were voters who said, I don't like either of these major party candidates. So that seems to be less of a dynamic today. I think more so than how is that very small percentage of disenfranchised or disillusioned voters, how are they going to vote? It comes down to turnout. It comes down to the enthusiasm of the voters who support either President
Sure.
Trump or former Vice President Biden.
So, Donald, let me ask you this. Here comes the what keeps you up at night question. A lot of people think Donald Trump is going to try to steal this election one way or the other. He always accuses the other guys of doing the rigging, but that's what we call the mechanism of projection. So if he tries to steal it, how does that affect you as a pollster?
Well, that's an interesting question. We are assessed ultimately on our predictive efficiency. You know, how close is the margin that we have in our last poll predictive of what the actual vote count is? So I'm certainly hopeful that there's a day relatively soon when all the votes are counted, whether those votes are in person or by mail, so that I can compare my final poll to the final vote tally. If for some reason there are votes that are, and if we're talking about a large number of votes that never get counted, I think we pollsters will be bemoaning, that eventuality, in our own little world. But I think that'll be more of a threat to democracy. That's sort of more significant than how Don Levy feels about his predictive efficiency.
Yeah. Don Levy, my question then is, how do you look at the other pollsters? Look, we all know that there are some infamous polls that belong to one party or the other, but particularly to the Republican Party, in my opinion, and I'm not going to name them because I don't want to be sued. But based on results, should we be evaluating what the level of trust we should have in particular pollsters are? For example, let's take the Rasmussen poll, which I think is fair to say tends to hover around the Republican Party like a bee around honey. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that the websites that do poll aggregation, whether it be 538.com or Real Clear Politics, are the sites that folks should go to, where on each and every day you can look at every poll that has been released, and you can look at the average, and you can see right in front of you if you want to take a specific state, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, and look and see what the variance is between and across polls. Then you can look at, certainly on 538.com, they will go to the trouble of ranking pollsters. We're quite proud. The work that we do in conjunction with the New York Times gets an A-plus ranking from 538.com, and that's in part because of our methodology, our transparency, the care with which we put into our polling that not everyone does. If people have the time, you trace a poll back to its methods. There are some polls out there that, we do live telephone calls off of voter lists. We ask for a voter by name. We combine their vote history with their stated probability. We apply that as a weight. But we're interacting with individual voters. And as I said, we have rigorous quotas. When we do, we're finishing up a couple of states here last night, Iowa being one of them. And we will, in a state like Iowa, we will have as many as 24 different quotas, individual quota groups that we fill. Not everyone does that.
Don, I'm sorry. What do you mean by quota?
So if you take a state and you divide it up into regions, and then within a region you say, okay, we need to have an appropriate number of people by gender, by age, by party affiliation in that region. So it's not that we're just looking for, you know, if a state has 35% Republicans and 30% Democrats, we're not just looking for those numbers. We compute the numbers in each region, and then we seek to get that many individuals within that region, within that age group, within that party affiliation to complete our poll to minimize the amount of weighting that is done at the end. All pollsters weight. All pollsters take the sample that they have, and they statistically adjust it to make it look like the population that they believe is going to vote. We try to minimize the amount of weighting that we do. It's called the design effect. So that's another component of pollsting that not everyone publishes. We do. And you can look at how much. I mean, there's a great example. It goes all the way back to McCain versus Obama. You know, a poll came out and said that young African Americans preferred John McCain to Barack Obama. And everyone went crazy. And then finally, when you looked under the hood, they had no quota for young African American men. They had two. They generalized those two individuals to speak for all young African American men, and you know, the damage was done. So we have quotas to protect against mistakes like that.
So how do you do it? Who does the phone calling?
We have a really exciting system now where we are using remote callers, given the pandemic, and we have callers working for us in Florida, Texas, Michigan, here in New York.
So these are not
students? Students are a small percentage of the folks that are actually working for us. So we have a system whereby we can train them online, and then we have a system whereby they can, you know, log into our system, you know, our servers, and then make phone calls remotely, and that data flows seamlessly right into our servers. So
how do you keep people who purposely want to corrupt your poll out from interfering? What if the Russians wanted to do it, for example?
We have as good a system of firewalls, you know, built into our IT as we're able to do. And to date, we've never had a hacking of our data. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have multiple redundancies so that you know, as soon as a poll comes in, you know, it's immediately shifted across three different servers. So we have three different records of it, and we make sure that all those records match.
Wow.
At the end.
Wow.
You know, so it's a pretty intricate system. You know, I think the only thing that we've ever seen happen is, and we corrected this, you know, when we're preparing a release, and you get all our releases, you know, we'll write it and we'll get it set and we'll program it to go out at 5 a.m. or 7 a.m. You know, we had somebody who figured out where we stored the releases prior to them being sent out, and they were able to come in and find the release prior to us sending it out. They couldn't get to the primary data, but they got a look at the release earlier than other people. And so now we built, you know, multiple firewalls that protect against that occurring.
In New York's 22nd Congressional District, Brindisi leads Tenney 48-39. That can be a very close race. How sure are you of what you're saying?
I'm sure enough that we're not polling it again. You know, we decided to devote our resources, you know, as we can, and that one we're standing on the earlier poll.
So the question is, what about guesswork on your part? There are some things you've got to guess at. You were talking about weighting, W-E-I-G-H-T, but at some point you make up your mind. Is that Don Levy, or is that a bunch of eggheads sitting around a room and saying, no, yes, yes, no?
Well, it's more than Don Levy. It's, you know, several eggheads. And I think the thing that you have to think about is, compare it to this. If you wanted to ask me to do a poll as to how New Yorkers feel about a pending piece of legislation, you know, then I poll all New Yorkers, and I know how many New Yorkers there are. When you do a pre-election poll, the universe that I'm generalizing to doesn't yet exist. It's the people who are going to vote as of November the 3rd.
Right.
So if indeed turnout varies from what has been historic and or what is indicated that is going to turn out based on enthusiasm, then I could have exactly the right poll, but if I project an electorate that is unlike what ends up showing up. So, for example,
sure.
If African-American turnout in a year is decidedly higher than it was in previous years, that's going to change. That's going to change my poll vis-a-vis the election outcome if I don't anticipate that. We've had elections here in New York. I remember when Carl Palladino ran, there were people that were calling me up incessantly saying, your polls are wrong because there's this massive amount of voters from Western New York who are going to turn out for Palladino who never vote. Now, that didn't happen. Our poll on Cuomo v. Palladino was exactly right. But, you know, so people will lobby me as well, telling me turnout's going to be in different than it was in 16, or it's going to be different amongst this group. So that's the difficult decisions that we have to make, is we're, in effect, waiting to a universe that the final tally on that universe is only going to be known after the election takes place.
What about young people? You know, Dave Gustina, the producer of this program, and I and so many other people, Joe Donahue, we've all taught courses. I believe you teach too. Do you not, Don?
Yep.
And we all say, are you going to vote? And every hand in the room goes up. Liar, liar, pants on fire. Young people have not voted. It's been often said that the only way to get them out is with a hydraulic device. Is this likely to be a different turnout?
I think it could be a slightly different turnout, but I think that our experience is that, it's tautological. Voters vote. So the people who are most likely to vote are the people who always have voted. And young people simply do not turn out historically at a rate the same as, let's say, voters that are 55 years of age and older. And there are always pockets. I mean, so you'll find a pocket of young people who are out there and they're ringing doorbells and they're wearing all the swag from the campaigns, and they're all in. But they unfortunately remain not the majority of young people. So we're anticipating a slightly higher turnout amongst young people. We're anticipating a turnout greater this year than we saw in 2016. We've already seen approximately 40 million people vote in 2016. There were just under 140 million votes nationally. So it does appear as though we're headed to overall a higher turnout. I don't think that's being primarily driven by young people, though.
Okay, so now you poll, let's say, in the state of Georgia. One-third of Georgians, 42% of the Democrats, have already voted. What does that mean? Can you tell anything about who stood in line and how they voted?
Well, so we can certainly tell from our poll, because when we call someone up, as I said, you know, we've already computed their likelihood to vote, but we also ask them, are you almost certain, very likely, somewhat likely, not very likely, not at all likely, or have you already voted? So we're seeing in some states, as many as 30 to 50% of people are saying they have already voted. They're a little bit off put sometimes when the next question is, if the election were today and you were going to vote today, who would you vote for? And they say, well, I told you I already voted. But when we compute vote choice amongst those people who have already voted at this point in time, Biden has an advantage, a dramatic advantage of about 30 points. When you look at the vote choice among those people who say they're going to vote on election day, President Trump has an advantage of about 5 to 7 points. So currently, Trump has an advantage amongst a bigger pool. That pool changes now every day. So it's an election unlike any other in that respect. We may see as many as 80 million Americans will have voted prior to Election Day.
Amazing. Is the United States Senate going to flip?
You know, right now it looks like that's a distinct possibility. We've polled quite a few of these Senate races. A number of them are quite close. You bring up Georgia. You know, when this process started, I never thought that the Georgia Senate race or races were going to be in question. Right now, we have Ossoff and Perdue tied in Georgia. And certainly there's going to be a runoff, and the Democrat contender in the runoff will be Warnock, and he's polling well. We see Cory Gardner. That seat looks like it will flip to Hickenlooper. The Democrats will probably lose the Alabama seat. But they're ahead right now, strongly ahead in Arizona, ahead in Maine. North Carolina is extremely close, and Iowa is a toss-up. So, you know, our poll in South Carolina has Graham still up by about 6 points. But I think that there's a distinct possibility that the Democrats could pick up 4 or 5 seats.
So Trump says he's putting New York in play in this election. That's nonsense, right?
Yes. Our most recent poll in the great state of New York has Biden up by 32 over Trump, and New York is not in play for the president. You know, I think that's something that people say, certainly that the president says at times.
And what about the state Senate in New York? You know, the Democrats recently took it. It has everything to do with the gerrymander and who's going to draw the maps. What's going to happen?
You know, I'll be honest. You know, we haven't done any state Senate polling. We've, you know, our head has been completely in the, the national landscape. So I wouldn't, you know, I really don't have an informed opinion there.
Well, I have to say thank you to our wonderful guest today, Don Levy of the Siena College Research Institute. Don, we thank you so much for giving us all this information. And could I ask for a small favor? Could you be on every day? So
sure.
Thank you.
Anytime you want me, Ellen, I'm happy to jump on with you. Thank you.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.